Legislative sessions in Arizona are predictable in a few ways. There will be arguments over education funding. At least one seemingly popular bill will die without a hearing, and someone will pick a fight with the cities and towns. And it seems the 2020 legislative session will feature in part a battle over so-called sanctuary cities. Lawmakers are already proposing bills to effectively prevent municipalities from establishing sanctuary policies or penalizing them for the consequences, as Tucson prepares for a November 5th vote on whether to formally declare itself a sanctuary city. Also, a federal judge on Thursday ordered the state senate to reinstate former staffer Tolonia Adams, who has also won financial awards from the courts for discrimination she argued she faced while previously employed at the Senate. Joining us now to make sense of all this, that's a lot to ask for, is Capitol veteran Jeremy Duda of the Arizona Mirror. Jeremy, good morning.
Morning.
So let's talk briefly about Tolonia Adams. What was she arguing in court?
What she was arguing is that she was, for a long time, denied pay raises, denied the position, positions that she wanted over there at the state senate that other folks got, and ultimately fired. And she claims that this was because she was black, because she's African American, because she's a woman, and a jury agreed with her and initially recommended, I think, as much as $1 million in damages. Though a judge last week decided that should be actually about $350,000 plus. She will get her job back, I believe. By the end of the month, I think, was what the judge ordered. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on.
Any word at this point, any feeling at this point, how people at the Capitol are feeling? I understand Secretary of State Katie Hobbs at least had a comment on this.
Yeah, she had somewhat of an apology, and because she was the Senate Democratic leader at the time. Obviously, she's Secretary of State now. This has been definitely a black eye for her. She had to say something there. I haven't heard much about how folks are feeling at the Capitol. I think it'll be interesting to see how Ms. Adams is received at the state senate when she gets her job back. She has, I know, expressed a hope that there won't be any awkwardness, that she'll be kind of welcomed back there.
All right, Jeremy, so let's talk about sanctuary cities. There are a couple of bills so far, one in the Senate, one in the House, that aim to penalize cities, basically, that become or declare themselves sanctuary cities. Does this sort of fit into the trend in recent years of states trying to tell cities what they can and can't do?
Well, certainly here in Arizona it fits into that trend. This is the perpetual battle down at the Capitol between the Republican-controlled legislature and usually Democratic-controlled cities who view they look at the state laws. Obviously, a lot of state policies not to their liking. They think, well, we could enact some of these more liberal, some of these more progressive policies here at City Hall. Sometimes they can. Other times the state decides, they want to put their foot down, put an end to it. And certainly nothing is more of a flashpoint in this regard than sanctuary cities. Now, it's worth noting that we actually do have, I would say, two laws on the books that should probably prohibit Tucson from doing this. One in Senate Bill 1070, the historic controversial legal immigration law from 2010, had a very specific provision in there prohibiting cities from refusing to enforce federal immigration law and cooperate with federal immigration laws. Plus, there was a law a few years later called SB 1487, and this was the more of a stricter punishment law for cities that kind of step out of line and do things that violate state law.
Let's briefly touch on the couple of lawmakers, both representing a North Scottsdale Fountain Hills district, John Kavanaugh and Jay Lawrence. Based on their history, any reason to be surprised that they're involved in something like this?
Not at all. John Kavanaugh, certainly he's been around for a long time. He voted. He was one of the lawmakers who voted on SB 1070 back in the day. He's, I think all but one Republican voter. He's one of the few who remains from that vote. Always known as somewhat of a hardliner on illegal immigration issues. Jay Lawrence, pretty conservative as well. I believe there's a third lawmaker who a month or two ago proposed a similar bill kind of cracking down if Tucson is to pass this, Brett Roberts from Pinal County. Mm-hmm. So you have at least three lawmakers who've kind of laid down their marker on this issue, and I'm sure if Tucson actually passes, if the voters actually approve this next month, I'm sure you will see another 30, 40 or so kind of express similar sentiments.
Jeremy, sanctuary cities aside, is there any reason to think that the relationship might be thawing in any appreciable way between cities and towns and the state?
Not really, just because there's always going to be new issues that come up, whether it's, a few years ago it was plastic bags, whether cities can ban those, whether cities can enact their own regulations on stuff like Airbnb. Well, now, there's specific issues there that are kind of may lead to some changes in policies there. Last session, it didn't happen, but there was a big push by the vaping industry to prohibit cities from enacting their own regulations, and that died, I think, not necessarily out of any fondness for the cities among legislative Republicans, but due to some other issues. But but there's always going to be more issues. And there's, you know, the historic example, I'd say, you know, Tucson trying to pass its own, you know, firearms regulations. That's been going on for, you know, God knows how long, forever. But there's always going to be something new. There's always going to be the cities trying to push the envelope in some new way, and state and the state trying to put its foot down and say, no, you can't do that.
Right. So fortunately, we're going to see a lot of fights where we see the state complaining about the feds and the cities complaining about the states, right?
Exactly. Good. You know, everything kind of rolls downhill.
Jeremy Duda of the Arizona Mirror, thanks as always.
As efforts ramp up in Tucson to pass an initiative declaring it a sanctuary city for immigrants, as we just heard, there are other cities around the country that have declared themselves sanctuaries for different causes. Cities and towns around the country have become sanctuaries for the unborn in opposition to abortion rights, and still others have become Second Amendment sanctuaries in support of gun rights. John Finn is professor emeritus of government at Wesleyan University. And he wrote about the constitutionality of sanctuary cities recently, and I spoke with him more about it.
There have been sanctuary cities probably since the Romans, and certainly in the United States, they go back a long way. But most of us are most familiar with sanctuary cities as a response to various immigration policies. As you probably know, they've taken off fairly dramatically with regard to immigration issues raised by the Trump administration, and those in turn built on immigration issues in the 1980s. And those are still very much a live part of our political culture. We debate them all the time. It's only in recent years, very recent years, that sanctuary cities have now begun to crop up for more traditionally conservative causes. So if you think of immigration as an issue that sparked sanctuary cities on the part of liberals who are anxious to resist federal immigration policy, the new sanctuaries, or the most recent form of sanctuaries, are more about protecting abortion, anti-abortion statutes, or Second Amendment rights more generally. And they're a fairly recent development in American history.
So you'll have cities and towns around the country that are doing things like saying, we're a sanctuary for life or something like that, and they're outlawing abortion in city limits?
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, the tamest form of these sort of sanctuaries for life are cities like Roswell, New Mexico, which announced that it thought Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided, for example. And that was simply a symbolic resolution. It means they think, you know, the Constitution should be read differently than the court read it in Roe versus Wade. But the more recent version of a sanctuary city was the town of Wascom in Texas. And it goes much further. It actually says not only that Roe is wrongly decided, it goes so far as to make most abortions illegal under their town law. That's a dramatic step forward. That's an outright defiance of federal law. But they didn't invent it. Really, the idea that sanctuaries could be converted or transformed from liberal causes to conservative causes is just a couple of years old, and really started with the development of so-called Second Amendment sanctuaries, where different jurisdictions, well over 75 now, have declared that their towns or their cities are completely immune from any federal or state law that would regulate the ownership of guns and other personal weapons.
And you also say that this idea in general goes back much further in the country, back to the 19th century.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, if you think about the Underground Railroad, for example, it's a kind of sanctuary movement.
Right.
The resistance to the Fugitive Slave Acts, both the original one and then the one in 1850, are both forms of sanctuary. They didn't often use that term, but certainly the premise and the concept are there.
Let's talk about the constitutionality of this, then. This goes to what exactly we mean by sanctuary, and you talked about how these are being applied differently in different places. But how is this possible in terms of a city sort of outright defying federal law? How are they allowed to do that?
Well, I wish I could give you a straightforward answer about what's constitutional and what is not constitutional. But there really isn't a clear, unequivocal answer in our constitutional tradition about under what circumstances states and local governments can refuse to apply federal law. There are some clear sort of basic principles we work with. And one is that the Article 6, the Supremacy Clause of Article 6, makes it clear that when there is a direct conflict between federal law and state law, the federal law must be superior. And that makes perfect sense if you think about it. There really isn't much point to having a national constitution if anybody can opt out of it whenever they're unhappy about what the result is. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, it's a little more complicated than that, in part because the 10th Amendment also makes it clear that things that are not given over to the federal government remain the prerogative of the states or the people. So the initial question you have in sort of assessing any sanctuary claim is whether or not this is one of those areas of public policy that the Constitution meant to entrust to the federal government or meant to leave to the states. And I wish I could give you a sort of litmus test of which ones are which, but the Constitution is notoriously vague about precisely where the boundaries are between state and federal power.
Well, where have these been tested at this point? Like, has a sanctuary city been challenged federally?
There haven't been direct challenges to the concept of a sanctuary city. The Supreme Court has made two sort of propositions very clear. The first is that ultimately it is a question for the federal courts to decide whether or not a subject matter area has been entrusted to the federal government, and hence Article 6 wins, or whether or not it should be reserved to the states. That sounds technical, but it's really the most basic of all kinds of political questions. And that question is, who gets to decide?
Right.
And the Supreme Court has made it fairly clear that in its view, at least, it gets to decide whether or not this subject area, let's call it abortion or the Second Amendment or immigration, is more properly entrusted to the federal government or to the states. Mm-hmm. But it's a political question as well as a constitutional question.
Yeah.
The other proposition that the court has made very clear is that no matter where the subject matter authority lies, the federal government cannot coerce state officials into carrying out federal law. So that further complicates the matter quite a bit. What it means essentially is that if the federal government, for example, were to pass comprehensive gun control, that it can find ways to encourage state officials to apply that law, but it can't actively co-opt state officials into carrying out the law. And there's a fine difference there. It's probably one that only lawyers could love, but it's the one we have.
So it sounds like if this is something that continues, these are very well issues that will be before the courts coming up here as we see either more cities doing this or the federal government making some actions in that way, like you mentioned.
I think these kind of conflicts are absolutely inevitable. We've already seen skirmishes. We've seen skirmishes every time there's been a sanctuary movement. And you probably know, and certainly most of the audience will know, that when President Trump wanted to withdraw funding from sanctuary cities for immigration causes, mm-hmm. that those ended up immediately in federal courts. Most of those lawsuits were settled or determined against President Trump. And those are important on their own terms, but they don't really address the fundamental question about whether sanctuaries for immigration or for any other cause are fundamentally constitutionally okay or not. And the truth of the matter is I don't think there's likely to ever be a catch-all comprehensive answer. I don't think that all sanctuaries are the same, speaking constitutionally. And as a consequence, because they are not the same, I don't think there's likely to be a single clear constitutional rule about when they pass constitutional muster and when they don't.
That is John Finn, Professor Emeritus of Government at Wesleyan University, a constitutional scholar who wrote about this idea of sanctuary cities recently for The Conversation. John, thank you for joining us to talk us through this.
Thank you, Lauren. I appreciate it.